What kind of designer drug are you on? How is Lance mixed up in all of this?
You know, oddly enough, I wasn't sure he was until now.
Lance doesn't have a clue about my work.
Nor did his mother, but that didn't save her.
You're threatening to kill Lance?
I'm not threatening, Stargrove. I'm promising to kill him, unless I get that disc.
Ragnar, I've lost too much blood for your games.
Stargrove, you're about to lose a whole lot more.
Balls. Episode 63 is here, putting on its leotard and backflipping into your potholes. My name is Dirk, and I will be the one poisoning your water tonight. Joining me in my ragtag crew of not people from the film Mad Max, you're wearing a poorly convincing beard disguise that only a top secret spy would be fooled by. It is Marcy Dale. Marcy Dale, wow. How are you doing?
You could have said Chuck Norris wannabe. Yeah. Let me see. I'm going to try to drag this out for you so you don't get insulted, but I am all right today. Thank you so much for asking me. How are you, Dirk?
I'm tip-top tickety-boo. Thank you, Marcy, for making an effort this week. But also, you probably heard them giving a in the background there at the mere mention of Chuck Norris. But they also gave me the finger earlier and I've only just recovered. It is Mikey P. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm feeling real appreciative that you guys are still my friends after I recommended watching this movie. So thank you. I appreciate it. Actually, I will say, if for anybody that's listening, like, let's not forget, I was very inspired by our voicemail, our caller from last week, Dale_A, podcast bad boy, who gave me the inspiration to pick this movie. So,
what movie are you talking about, Mikey? Because this stopped for a second. Yeah, this is a movie podcast. Yeah. You're right. That's what we do. We're going to chat about a movie later on. Mm-hmm. And what is that movie that you picked? And don't be blaming no one else. This is all the words came out of your mouth.
Yes.
What did you pick?
Well, obviously, from the artwork, everybody sees beautiful John Stamos on it. And everybody knows the most famous John Stamos movie is Never Too Young to Die. And that's what we're talking
about. Never Too Young to Die.
It's a great
John
reminder.
Stamos, you may know him from Who's the Boss? over there in America, right? Something like that. But we are the Movie Mixtape. Hello, come in, sit down. You'll be more comfortable. We are three very, very good friends. Okay? Just believe that bit, and then everything else will be okay when Marcy starts insulting everybody else. It's all friendly. We just accept it. On the Movie Mixtape, what we do, we share movies that we love, all based around a theme, and the current theme is something called Instant Mix, which Marcy came up with, which are films you fell in love with right from the very beginning. And so later on, we'll be chatting Never Too Young to Die, which was Mikey's pick. But how is everybody? How you all been doing?
I don't know. I just showed you guys some stickers I picked up today. We had a nice little sticker fair in my lovely city. And I don't know. It's just nice supporting local artists. And I love stickers. So that's what I did today.
Like, you went out to go to the sticker fair. This wasn't like you happened upon it.
One of my favorite artists from Pittsburgh was posting yesterday that she was going to be there, and that was the first I heard about it. And I don't know, I saw their
poster. What's her name? Give her a plug. Give her a plug.
Her name is Emily M, and I think I've sent both of you some of her stickers before.
I am surprised that a sticker fair was not on all the news outlets over there, and you had to hear about it from an artist's Instagram. that shocks me that that is not big news over in Pittsburgh, a sticker fair.
Right. We don't have much going on here. So there were a ton of people there, though. I mean, like, it's in this cool little place, like a workshop where normally, like, if you just want to go do, like, a fun, cool, like, art project, you can go do it there. And then sometimes they have like events and 50 vendors today. That's a lot. And
wow,
you were allowed to bring pets in, so I saw a couple cats and dogs. Very exciting for Kaya and I. It was a great time.
How does Kaya do at these one of these fairs?
She just waves at everybody and everyone's like, your baby's so cute, and then she just points at what she wants and we get it. So
do you correct them, Marcy?
What? Correct them what? That my baby is not cute? What are you
that
talking
she
about?
She is not a baby. She is a toddler. She is over the age of one, and she is mobile on her feet.
She is walking.
She's a toddler.
She is doing a lot of things right now. But to me, she's my baby, so I'm okay if people say she's a baby. So Mochi's still my baby. And Mochi's old. Well, not old, but Mochi's 5, and Mochi's always baby, and Kaya's probably going to always be baby.
So. The laws of biology don't apply to cats. As we know, they are immortal beings. Sticker fairs aren't a thing over here. You know, nobody's going to set up a sticker fair in an abandoned science hideout and try and sell you stickers of Flash Gordon or Brian Blessed in Flash Gordon in particular, because he's our favorite over here, I suppose. That doesn't happen, so... That's a whole new world to me. A whole new world.
Okay, I'll bring you to the sticker fair sometime, okay?
It's going to take a lot of forward planning, that. You've only just, you know, you've only just found out about this sticker fair, like, literally yesterday or something. You can't be phoning me up and saying, get on a plane to Pittsburgh. There's a sticker fair on tomorrow. But
the excitement of a sticker fair might make it happen, so we'll see.
You all right, Mikey?
Yes, I'm okay, Dirk. Everything's okay. Just been working, and honestly, this movie was one of the highlights of my week. It actually brought me joy this week, and that's what this podcast is all about.
Mm.
Getting to know each other, watching something fun.
Mm.
Not that Oppenheimer wasn't fun. Oppenheimer is great, but it's just great that we have
that
such
was
a diverse...
like a laugh-a-minute movie. What are you talking about?
It's such a diverse grouping of movies. Like, where else will you find a podcast? We talk about Hawk the Slayer, Oppenheimer, and then Never Too Young to Die. Never. We will never find this combination.
And most people are grateful for that. You know, that this is something they can actively put in one corner and avoid. But if you're not one of those people, we welcome you. We welcome you with open arms. I did an escape room this week. You ever done an escape room?
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have a funny story about an escape room, but please tell me.
No, Marcy, by all means, you take over my story. Go on.
No, I'll wait. I would love to hear your story.
No, we're all
sorry.
Waiting to hear. We're all waiting to hear your story now. That's fine.
God, it's gonna sound like so weird. So I went to an escape room for a bachelorette party one time, and they started by putting bags over our heads to get us into the room we were going to. And then they handcuffed us all to a bench. And you had to use a broomstick to get the key off or whatever. But my wrists are so tiny, I snuck out of the handcuffs and picked up the key. So that's my fun story.
Harry Houdini over here. Houdini.
Little tiny wrist. Maybe he had little tiny wrists too. So.
Anyway, I was going to tell you about my escape room story before Marcy.
No handcuffs for you?
No handcuffs, no, because that's a bit weird, isn't it? That's not really an escape. That's not really an escape room.
I'm just saying.
Mikey, that's like torture porn. This was a team building thing we did with work, right? Team building. And we were there about we took over the place. There were like 4 different escape rooms, and we got and we got randomly put in these different rooms, and we got put in the only 5-star difficulty room there, Mikey. 5-star difficulty.
Oh,
and it was called the teleporter. So we didn't have handcuffs, but we were physically teleported to different sort of areas. And no, it wasn't just a door that opened and you had to pretend you'd been teleported somewhere else. Absolutely not. We were actually really teleported to the jungle at one point. It's crazy.
Whoa.
It was crazy. Ask us if we escaped, Mikey.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to think you were the person that got you guys to escape. I'm going to say you were the key component to having everybody escape.
There's always something I've felt about myself, Michael. And that is, I'm not a leader, okay? I'm a good number two. I'm a good number two. I'm a Riker. You know, in the crew, I'm Riker. You know, I'll get things done, but ultimately, probably somebody else has to make most of the other decisions. But I found something out. Yeah? In this escape room, in the teleporter. I'm the leader, Mikey.
I'm the leader. I know you are. Yes.
When everybody else was falling to pieces, I said, give me that thing. And I was just working out mathematics in my head. I'm just doing it, sticking them all up, finding keys.
Oh,
you had
my
to get
God.
Fish out of a tube at one point. I was getting fish out of a tube.
Whoa. This is amazing. I wish you saw this.
Yeah. And guess what?
You escaped.
We escaped. That's right. Yeah. We were given an hour to get out of this room. Didn't need an hour. We had 6.5 minutes to spare. 6.5 minutes. And in the past seven days, only one other group has escaped that room.
That's amazing.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
That's amazing.
That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about America. That Good sort Lord. Of shit. Yeah.
Man, between you and Marcy, you guys would be the perfect escape room team.
I have never failed an escape room, just saying.
She's got the thin hypermobile joints, and I can get fish out of tubes. So it is the perfect combination. Mikey, if we needed somebody who could just charm somebody with their debonair good looks, you know, maybe to open a lock, like face out of the A-team, you would be there.
I'll take your compliment, even though you kind of made it obvious that I can't do the mathematics. I won't be able to do that. I'll have to do the
Mikey, be the you face. Know as well as, you know as well as I do
that Americans don't know math. I know.
In a proper team, you can't have the same skill as someone else.
Okay? That's a good point.
So you can't do that. That's like
the muscle. You have the Ocean's 11 thing. When they went through all the different jobs. I gotcha. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why on this podcast, I'm the grumpy one. You are the beautiful one. And Mass is the annoying one. So that is how this triad works. Trilogy, trio, three amigos. So that was my news.
I like that. I've never done an escape room. I think I'm overdue. It sounds fun.
I think they're very hit and miss. You might get one like Marcy where you just get handcuffed and
bachelorette.
I'll take care of it after that.
Made to urinate in the corner of a room with a
Do you find they are good team builders?
Yeah.
Like, would you recommend this?
Yeah.
Do you look at your coworker? You have like an experience with like a coworker where you're like, okay, we're bonded in a different level outside of work.
I think so. You know, we all got together, we all hugged. Touched each other's butts, that sort of thing. Said that maybe we should go get a sauna together. That we made plans for that afterwards, and we especially enjoyed it when one of the other teams came out and they hadn't escaped. We enjoyed that a lot. So our five were very happy when other people failed. So it was great team. Great team building. Maybe we should do one when we meet up for our annual movie mixtape conference.
Retreat. We have a tape deck retreat now. We have to go up to
I forgot about that. Oh Jesus. We're gonna have to wear suits and act like Mikey, you're gonna have to act like you listen to the other podcasts.
That's right. We're gonna have to be hazed. They obviously are gonna haze us for being the first one.
I thought you said we have to behave, and I was like, duly noted, we'll try. But
Marty, God bless us, already trying to be a better person. Now that the money's rolling in, she's recognized she has to be on her best behavior.
No more handcuff talk. Yeah.
No more sending disappointed cat gifts to other members of Discord, Marcy. Okay.
I mean, I'm going to keep doing that till the day I die.
Well, should we do it? Should we just get into the movie unless anyone else has got anything else to say?
I just think we should, since Mikey, and we're talking about tape deck, and one of our fellow Bene Gesserits of tape deck, Dale, I just want to say cheers to Dale, and let's dedicate this one to Dale. So we love you, Dale.
Drink them. Just pour one out for you.
Me and Marcy are actually drinking, Dale, to cheers you. Mikey?
Mikey frantically looking for a water bottle.
Mikey's just had.
Is that Old Spice?
It's Old Spice.
Mikey's just had one of those probiotic yogurt drinks. cheers to you, Dale.
Cheers, Dale.
Cheers, Dale.
This movie is related to Dale and Tape Deck. We had a my first experience with this movie. Speaking of retreats, we get together as men in brotherhood. And we like to do like an annual trip where we get together and we bond. Dirk is actually, I've had the pleasure of meeting Dirk in real life at one of these things. I think it was 2018. We did a trip and a bunch of guys in a room and we just said, let's throw on, this was our mutual friend Timothy's idea to throw on this movie. None of us had ever seen it. And this, to me, defines the instant mix. Because as soon as you put this on, you know exactly what you're getting. You know exactly what... Actually, you don't know what you're getting. You have no idea what you're watching. But you know instantly that this is something to behold.
You know the vibe you're getting, right?
You know the vibe. That's exactly what I'm saying.
We'll get into it, but... We'll get into it. I beg to differ just a tad. Just a tad on that.
Go on, Mikey. Keep going. Just ignore it.
And this just became like one of those movies, I think a perfect movie to sit around and laugh about. Another friend of ours, Dale's co-host of Bat and Spider... Chuck Forsman, we surprised him once via Zoom, and for his birthday, we all sat together on Zoom, and we watched this movie collectively as, like, we're all sitting in the theater, and it was, like, really fun. And it's just, like, a perfect movie just to be, like, to get into, to laugh at, to make fun of, to actually enjoy, and I'm glad we're talking about it.
It's nice, Mikey. That was really lovely, so thank you for sharing.
Well, it's a good mix. Instant. This is an instant classic, I think, no matter who watches it.
So yeah, the movie is Never Too Young to Die from the 1980s of the six, and starring what is your man, John Stamos, Gene Simmons from the rock band Def Leppard, and somebody called Vanity. Vanity, both a noun and an adjective. Very mysterious. Well, Mikey, do you have a synopsis to regale us with?
Yes. I mean, we have to go back a little bit because the story of the hero dates back way before cinema. Ulysses,
true.
Hercules, to modern day American superheroes like Spider-Man and Batman. Movies are no different than the written word and have spawned the births of the likes of Luke Skywalker and Ellen Ripley. In 1986, following in the footsteps of this great tradition, the world was bestowed with yet another great heroic relic. Lance Stargrove. He is a man boy, not yet out of college. And his feelings get hurt when his daddy misses his gymnastics meet and parents' night. Never Too Young to Die tells the epic poem of his transition into a man through tragedy, loss, comedy, revenge, and romance. This tale will show Stargrove learning his father was taking down a gang of horse-headed motorcycle gang who aimed to poison the water supply. Something also about a microchip or something. And like every great hero, they are elevated by a great villain. And Velvet Von Ragnar is no exception to this. The maddening scream of his finger stabbing bent on fulfilling their evil deeds. Honestly, they had a pretty sweet community going. Everybody in the gang was pretty like-minded and communal. It seemed like Ragnar had a pretty good approval rating among them. But then this Stargrove comes along and had to mess it all up. So maybe this movie is actually about Ragnar out to remind Stargrove that you are never too young to die.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Mikey,
that's the best synopsis yet, Mikey.
That is probably one of... That's better than any synopsis I've ever heard.
Well, it's certainly better than some of the recent shit you've been doing, Marcy.
My Oppenheimer one was okay, but...
Most of what I'm thinking of, that was...
A Knight's Tale.
Oh my god!
Or how about my Departed, where I pretended to get a phone call after one sentence.
Beautiful. No, thank you, Mikey. That is a great synopsis. A fantastic synopsis.
So Stargrove. I went to rewatch. Yo, oh my god! It's been in my head all week. Stargrove.
What a great name, Lance Stargrove. Just, I mean, I was in love straight from that. So yeah, instant mix, and you sort of said that you felt you knew what you were going to get. Well, you kind of know what you're going to get as soon as you're watching it. And Marcy sort of tapped her hammer on the dowel and said, I don't think so.
I don't think so, Mikey.
But what do you mean? What do you mean first, Mikey? And then we'll go over to Contrary Marcy afterwards. What did you mean?
There is something called So Bad It's Good. And I think this movie, as soon as it starts, you know, this is going to be so bad it's good. I don't know if it's trying to be genuine, but also I feel like it's self-aware. Also, when I started it too, talking about Instant, is I decided to start it on YouTube. The one version I had like Russian subtitles, and it just like starts, and like there's Gene Simmons as Ragnar giving his whole, like he's doing the exposition of his plan. I'm like, oh wait, this must be edited. This isn't the right movie. It's probably a YouTube edit. So I'll go to Tubi. I think I avoided Tubi because they changed their logo and I don't like it. So I went to Tubi and I started up. That's how the movie starts. Before you even adjust in your seat, there's an exposition of what the plan is. But there was just no like flyover of the gang. There was no like introduction. It was just like, we're in it. We're in the speech.
And I was loving it. I was going, holy shit. He's just doing an exposition dump right at the beginning of this film. But he did it in such a way like he's informing all of his minions what his plan is. So it seemed fairly okay. I was like, all right, that makes sense. He's telling all his minions what the plan is. But he's also telling us that he's halfway through his plan. So it was like, we come into this film halfway through, don't we? Like, he's done the first bit, and then but then he's lost his bloody disc. He's lost his bloody disc. He wants to poison the water supply. He doesn't quite know why, but he knows that if he does do it, he can get whatever he wants out of it. But he needs a disc, and he's lost it. Marcy, I'm not saying you didn't like it, but you said you didn't feel like you knew what you were getting from the beginning.
All right. I do have to mention, you already brought it up earlier, but...
Was it this bitch?
No. As soon as he said my little turd balls, I was like, yes, okay, yeah, this is great. I'm so happy. No, it's just the way, I love the introduction. I thought it was so cool. I think Gene Simmons was just amazing. He looked so much like Tim Curry in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I didn't think of that.
I was so excited by the beginning of this, but I thought it was the apocalypse. And I thought it was going to be a Mad Max movie.
Yeah.
And then it was modern day, the next thing you knew. And so I just was a little bit thrown off by that. I was like, okay, so it's like the end of the world. And sure. No. Then we get to John Stamos at college. I thought he was in high school for a little bit.
Yeah,
I see problems here with this if he's in high school and, you know, hooking up with some people later on.
But... I wrote down, he's in high school?
That's what I thought.
But then, no, he has a roommate who appears to be 35 as well. Mm-hmm. So I do believe he was in college.
His very own Data, basically.
he was straight out of the 80s, that roommate, wasn't he? Oh, my gosh. We got that kind of Mad Maxian start with a very flamboyant performance by Gene Simmons. But then we flip straight to John Stamos doing some trampolining and that lovely Stargrove. I think that's when it came on, right? He's just doing trampolining for like about 2 or 3 minutes. We meet Lance Stargrove, the son of Drew Stargrove. Now, I got a little bit confused, right, at this point. So we meet Drew Stargrove fairly quickly. He's Lance's dad. He seems to be Velvet Ron Ragnar's arch nemesis. Mm. This is what I'm getting from this. They've a bit like Voltan and Hawk. They've been battle many times before. And Drew Stargrove seems to give every woman he sleeps with an earring with his family's symbol on it. So that's how Velvet Von Ragnar knew one of his own minions had slept with him and given him this disc, which was called something like Ram Cake or something. I could never quite hear what it was called. But then we see Drew Stargrove, and I have no idea what he was doing. Do you know what he was doing? He was on some... We figure out he's a secret agent, and he's like going underground, and he's got this blowtorch. But I have no idea what he was doing.
Okay, wait. I have to talk about the blowtorch because I was laughing. So when he started fighting the one guy with it, made me think of the Thing a little bit too, because that's how they fight the Thing.
Oh,
there's so many 80s movies like
in this movie.
But just the little, like, he had like the flamethrower and it was very pathetic and he was like, ah, back off. And the guy was like, whoa. Yeah. It's really funny.
Yeah, I love that the gang fought with like traditional weapons like bats and spike bats and Also, yeah. I know we said Mad Max. Yeah. It probably was the inspiration, but I love the design. I love
Warrior?
Like
Warrior? Were you thinking like more Warriors?
I was thinking the Warriors in that speech, like because he kind of wins over this crowd, and it's all like different costumes. And yeah, I love the horse-headed motorcycles and stuff. I thought they were pretty cool. Yeah. The weapons they had were pretty cool.
I loved it too. I really liked that they were just so out of context with what was going on around. And like Marcy said, you feel like it's the apocalypse, but actually, no, they're just walking around town dressed like this. Like they've got furry barbarian outfits on with skulls over their crotches.
What? But they were the outcasts. They were like the Morlocks. I was actually feeling this is the probably like the third time or something I watched this movie. And I was like, I was really into the gang part. Like I was thinking,
I mean, if you're looking to have a good time, I'd rather hang out with that gang than all the
all happy
college students.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of them were incredibly stupid, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like, they really played up the fact that all of them were really dumb. So I don't know if you'd have a great time with them or not. They would probably be... Marcy, you couldn't talk to them about Roman Holiday, for example. You know, I don't think they've ever seen that
Maybe
film.
We could have movie night. You never know. I mean, they looked like they were having fun in that club later, so... But that's how cults start, right? Everybody's just desperate.
Watching Roman Holiday,
Watching Roman Holiday and not sure where to go, and then you see Gene Simmons and you're like, yeah, that's my guy or lady, so let's go. So...
Bringing it back to this plot. So we see Drew, the dad, Stargrove. He's doing something, which I still don't know what he was doing. But there's also a guy there with him who does not look like that beard really belongs to him. Like immediately I'm going, Drew, Mr. Stargrove, that man on your team, that is not his real hair or facial hair. It's obvious, mate. It's really obvious. And sure enough, he turns out to be a bit of a bad guy, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And even from that, I'm going, that's Gene Simmons, that mate, in a beard. That is Gene Simmons in a wig and a beard. You're supposed to be like some top spy and you haven't figured that bit out. So anyway, Gene Simmons does him in. We don't find out it's Gene Simmons then. That's the weird bit as well. Like, I mean, I'm speaking for you, but I presume you both knew immediately that was Gene Simmons. My sticking her head.
I thought they couldn't get Chuck Norris if they had some fake makeup on somebody.
Listen,
I thought it would.
You got to go back to the time when before it was like 4K, before it was 1080p. They were watching this on a TV.
Later in the movie.
Yeah.
I watched somebody hold their iPhone up to this plane off of their DVD player on YouTube. My screen resolution was below SD. And I was like, mate, Velvet von Ragnar is in your squad.
It's a low budget. I just thought maybe they didn't have the time in the makeup chair for that guy. Mm. I don't know.
I will. All right. But we do. But he does turn on him almost immediately. And he does him in. This guy with the weird beard and the weird hair.
The weird beard.
With the weird beard. Kills Blue Stargrove. Dead. Kills him dead. In a lovely little bit where they shoot him with like a shotgun and he does a backflip just as his son lands is doing a backflip.
Oh, that was so fucking funny. I'm sorry. I was dying.
I don't know. I was like, well done, mate. That is good.
Can we back it up a little bit? I really love the part where Drew is like running down, I don't know, something, and then gang's like coming on the other side and he just pops up an umbrella.
They all
stop and they're like, oh no. And then he just starts shooting people.
It was bulletproof umbrella. That was really cool.
It's very clearly, we said Mad Max a lot, but it's very clearly a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
And very clearly a James Bond who has a son movie. And he has all these little gadgets through it. And that one you're talking about, the umbrella. The thing I loved about that is he opens up the umbrella as they're running. Everybody stops. And then he just puts the umbrella down after about 5 seconds and starts shooting. And doesn't use it again for another 10 seconds. Yeah. It's like, brilliant. Well done, Drew Stargrove.
I do have to just applaud Mikey, though, for picking another dad's Emma Wright
movie. I know. He was so bitter. He was so bitter his dad misses gymnastics meet. Like, oh my God. And then when his dad sent the package too, he was just like, he's just seeding venom at his dad. Like Morris. When Zach Morris's dad, they had that one episode with Zach Morris.
He could even stand by his dad's grave at the funeral. That's how mad he was about it.
Yeah, I know. That was weird as well, wasn't it? But I also
You would think, like, he'd be like, oh, your dad missed it because he died. by the way, FYI. Yeah. And he'd be like, oh, man, I feel bad. I feel guilty for feeling all sore about that. But he's still bitter. He missed my match. I don't care if he's dead. He missed my meat.
But so what else have we got?
I love how you're going to try to follow the plot of this movie.
I don't know. Do you know what? I watched it twice, and sometimes I'd be going, God, what have I just missed there? And I have to rewind it, and I'd go, oh, I didn't miss anything.
No, you didn't.
But it felt like I should have missed something, because something quite different was happening, and I was like, oh, what have I missed it? Oh, nothing. It's just something different now.
Just the editing magic, much like Oppenheimer. I was watching it, like, I was trying to go back to some scenes, and Logan was next to me, and I was like fast forwarding through certain parts. He's like, why are you fast forwarding? I'm like, the shooting. All they're doing is shooting for like the next like 5 minutes. They're just going to be shooting. It was funny. Logan was trying to follow this movie. He'd be like, what's the problem? What's the plot of this? Like, what is he trying to poison the people? I was like, I don't know. I really don't, dude. I have no idea.
And I felt like they never really explained.
No.
Like who Drew Stargrove was. I mean,
was the FBI? I have no idea.
I'm piecing it together that he was like some secret agent, but I don't think we ever got that explained why the Australian man was working for the American Secret Service. And I don't think they ever told Lance exactly what was going on. And I don't think even what's she called, Vanity's Danger. Danger, was that the name of the lady?
Oh, God.
I don't think she ever explained what she was doing.
No.
She was just like living on his dad's farm, riding a horse really fast.
And he implied like they were sleeping together and she took offense to it. But like, what else are you here for? Who are you?
I think she said they were partners. So, I mean, and I took that to mean they were spy partners.
Okay.
But, like, I mean, it was never really explained that, was
nope.
it? It was like,
nope. Nope. She was at the funeral, and he's like, okay, who's that? And it's one of your dad's associates, and she drives off, and then he follows her. And then what happens? Like, then
he finds out about the farm after the funeral.
That's right.
And, he inherits the farm.
And I just love that, like, my dad was in an accident. And he's like, your dad wasn't in an accident. And he's like, what?
No, he wasn't. I think he said, my dad didn't die in no accident. I'm like, mate, why are you thinking that? Like, where has that even come from? Why would you think that your dad hadn't died in an accident? He goes up to this farm. There is this attractive lady riding a horse. What I love then, something that then happens recurrently through this film, a scene starts, and then within 30 seconds or 60 seconds, there is a bad guy immediately with a battle axe in there.
Yeah.
So.
I thought you were going to say something else, because her shirt is open within 30 to 60 seconds as well.
Martin, I didn't notice. So, yeah. But she's there just grooming this horse, just grooming it, giving it a good brush. And in walks a guy dressed like a barbarian.
He was awesome. Yeah,
I thought we were just not going to see him again after this scene. But no, he turns up quite a few times. Thank Jesus.
Yeah, thank God. He was ripped.
I liked it when, like, she pushed him to the ground. They're in this stable. And she goes, eat shit. And
it does.
pushes his face into the horse too. I mean,
I absolutely loved whenever they get to the house and she's on the revolving door or wall, and the other side has all the machine guns, but somehow when she turns around, she has a machine gun.
Doesn't make any sense, but don't worry about that. She must have had other guns in there. Mm-hmm. So Lance, the son, goes to check out his farm, only to find very attractive, probable also spy lady there, grooming a horse and being attacked by a barbarian. So he kind of joins in, but she shoos the barbarians off. And then they have a bit of a discussion, I think, about various different things. And then did they just decide to go and watch Velvet von Ragnar do what happens then?
Well, he does have a genuine moment, like, what the hell is going on? And she's like, then she gets dressed and she comes downstairs and she's like, I'm going to go out. And he's like, well, I'm coming. And she's like, no, you're going to stay here. But he follows her, of course. And that's when, I don't think he knew where he was going. He was just following her. That's what it was.
She purposely went there because that was where Velvet von Ragnar was doing her show, I think, wasn't
right,
it?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they go and watch Velvet von Ragnar's show.
First of all, they know where the house is now, this gang, we should leave. And she's like, no, you're safe. Why are you safe? The whole gang knows where the house is. I don't know. But anyway, then she goes out. You know, this is the guy that killed your partner. Why are you going to go get all dressed up and like watch the show?
She
why
got
would you?
Dressed up.
Yeah.
She looked like she was the sexiest person in Star Trek when she wore that outfit, didn't she? It was like some kind of sparkly blue Star Trek uniform with this boob window instead.
Can I talk about this bar though? It's awesome. The elevator had the lights in there. There was a dude in the elevator on his motorcycle with a horse head on it. And they were like people going up to the bar in their motorcycle. It was like
in the motorcycles. Yeah.
It was the awesomest bar I've ever seen in my life. This was like so
cool.
They
were getting drinks and oil for
the
motorcycle.
Yeah, it was so cool.
I really loved the server.
Yeah.
Was talking to them and he says, "Treat him good, bitch, or I'll rip your eyes." Laugh really hard.
Well, they go and watch Velvet do their performance, and I'm thinking, right, she's gone because she's suspicious about Velvet and Ragnar and that they've done in Drew, but they actually just watched the performance and then she goes home.
The bar closed down. I love that the bar was like, okay, it's 2 a.m. We're raging. We're going to turn off the lights, though.
I have a very serious question. Mm-hmm. When you were watching the performance, did you notice the lady in the Mickey Mouse shirt? That
yes!
Was so
yes! She was like older, too. She was like middle-aged in the Mickey Mouse shirt.
She was having a great time.
She was like the script supervisor, and they're like, we need bodies in the background. Go in the back. Sure. Yeah, I love that the bar closed down. They're like, we're like this badass bar, but we have to close down. It's 2 a.m. We have to close.
Well, and Danja goes home, right? But Lance, mm-hmm. he thinks, I'm not going home. There's something suspicious here. And he goes back to get an autograph off Velvet von Ragnar. And I love everything about this bit. The way Velvet is like, I'm suspicious about you too. I'm just going to shout the name Stargrove and see if you respond to it. I was like, well, that's a brilliant plan. So Velvet's like, Stargrove? And he could see him fighting to not turn around. That's not my name. I'm not Stargrove.
Is this supposed to mean something to me?
I was cracking up at that. It's like, brilliant. Oh, that is a genius plan. And then we have Chekhov's chewing gum. That comes back. So we had the Asian the Asian inventor's, the roommate, the roommate who just so happened to have made a bugging device with chewing gum. So he uses that. But I love the fact that Velvet just finds it within 30 seconds. So it was an absolutely pointless bit of plot. It did nothing. Absolutely
and then
pointless.
It's like him like listening. He's like, I'm going to get some good intel here. And then he just flushes it down the toilet.
So far, if you're keeping track at home, there has been no actual good spy work done. This is a theme that will continue through this movie. At no point does anybody do any good spy work.
That roommate was awesome, by the way. That was such a good friend of him. Like, he was always upbeat. He gave him all these inventions. Like, he couldn't have done this without the roommate, and I just feel like he didn't get his props at all.
Well, but he did get to murder people with immunity. So the roommate turns up later on and literally just gets right into it and starts killing people.
I brought a flamethrower for you, man.
Yeah. I brought my other murder inventions, and I'm just going to start using them on people randomly and hope that they're the bad people. So he killed about five or six
That's
people.
True.
At the
Good
end,
point.
Everybody was like backslapping him. Well done, kid. Murderer.
we get
a few sort of things through. So the guy with the really bad beard and the fake wig is called Carruthers. And even though we know that he killed Drew in the first 7 minutes of this film, he continues to be on the good team for the next sort of hour and 10 minutes. So what, and it took me a while to click, but then I loved that because like, oh, that's how come wherever they go, all the bad guys turn up within 30 seconds because Carruthers always knows where they are. And I was like, that's genius.
Right. Yeah.
So there's no messing about. Carruthers goes, oh, they're going to the bar or they're going to this farm. And so he sends all of his weirdo mates with their furry underpants and the battle axes. I was very much into that. And then, oh my goodness, who else is in this film?
Oh, what are you going to say?
Only bloody Freddy Krueger's in it.
Oh. Wait, did I miss this?
Robert Englund's in it as the bad tech guy.
Oh my God, that was him? Yeah. I didn't realize that was him.
When the movie ends, there's a special appearance by Robert Englund. That was like the first credit that appeared.
I had to put two pairs of glasses on just to check. I was like, that's Robert Englund. Because he looked so small compared to Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so funny. I didn't realize that was him at all. Oh, my God.
So they both had, like, tech guys, didn't they? So Velvet had, I think, Robert Englund, and Lance had Cliff is the name of his murdering tech guy. So it was a bit, it is proper. It's proper James Bond, isn't it? They're really going for that Q 007 type thing while set in a Mad Max universe. But I think Danja and Lance go back to the farm together for some reason. I can't quite remember. And then we get like a 5 minute, like in a 90 minute movie, we get like a 5 minute seduction scene. Which is like, I can't remember why Danja was desperate to have sex with Lance, other than him being a very gorgeous man. But she, like hoses herself down in front of him, and he's like trying to distract himself by eating an apple.
He doesn't try to walk away. He just comes back out with an apple.
Where are all these apples coming from?
The Fed supplied the house with apples. Yeah, it was.
This man is going to feel some sexual tension, and he needs some apples to chew on.
But that literally was about 5 minutes before he caved in and decided, oh, I should probably have some sex with this beautiful lady in this farm.
I was really hoping that when they were having sex, we were just going to see a guy in the corner playing the saxophone.
It was a very unerotic sex scene, though, as well, wasn't it? It's like they were headbutting each other. It's like they were, like, smacking each other. And
so I watched this with Dan last night. And he's like, why does he keep dropping her on the bed?
Yeah.
And I said, well, she just put a bunch of suntan lotion on, so she's slipping out of his
hand. I was thinking about the lovemaking scenes in Oppenheimer, and I think that's what was missing, was a three-edit cut of him repeatedly dropping her in the same motion onto the bed. It was very odd.
Now I've become death-destroyed.
It was so awkward. John Stamos, he just felt so out of place in that scene. I don't know what it was. He just felt punching above his weight there or something. I don't know what it was.
I think if I have one criticism, and it will only be one just criticism of this film, it would be the casting of John Stamos. He is not particularly likable or believable. I think he's got zero chemistry with this incredibly attractive woman.
I have to say, before the movie started, I was looking at John Stamos's letterbox, and I was like, wow, he's not really been in a lot of movies. And then the movie started, and I said, okay,
that
here we extends go. A lot.
Mm-hmm. In a movie where Gene Simmons is acting, he was probably the worst actor. So it goes quite a long way. What do you think, though, Mikey? Did you like John? Do you think his performance was good?
I was thinking, what I was saying, it just was off. But at the same time, this was the 80s, and they could have put some other generic, like, white dude in this movie, and it wouldn't have been fun, I don't think. I think John Stamos is what makes it, like, fun, just because it's that so bad it's good type of thing. But if you put, like, somebody...
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that Full House is the year after this. So I thought Full House started in the 90s.
This is the Uncle Jesse primer, obviously. This is this is actually his backstory. This is Uncle Jesse, because you don't know what with Jesse's.
So is he a famous person at this point?
I would say no. Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I'm going to say no as well. I thought, though, you know what? As the movie was going on, I really thought he was taking it very seriously.
But then
it's like, as the movie was going on, they were like, John, really just lighten up a little bit. And then he seemed to be like getting it a little bit more as the movie, you know.
Well, I sent you guys that trailer, and I feel like they were building him up behind the scenes, be like, dude, you're going to be the next, like, Arnold, like, you're the next action star. And I think that's maybe why he was doing it a little seriously. And then maybe he just started becoming self-aware of what this movie was.
Literally only in three things before this movie, and really minor like side things. Nothing prominent.
I think I probably preferred it when he was taking it seriously. I don't know. I think he's not quite charming enough to be nudge, nudge, wink, wink at the camera. I think that was how I felt. I quite liked it.
I mean,
when he was playing it a bit straighter.
The only time I find John Stamos really endearing and sweet is when he's trying to sell you Greek yogurt, but that's just me.
He's never sold me Greek yogurt, so I don't know.
Well, obviously, you haven't gone down the right streets.
But I thought, you know, I read that Gene Simmons doesn't like this film, but I thought he was all right in it.
I thought he was awesome.
I loved his boots. I loved his wardrobe. I thought he was having a ball. I'm sad to hear that he didn't really own it.
Like, I forgot he was Gene Simmons after a while. Because I think he really possessed this character. Like, I think he brought something to it that I don't think anybody else would.
He gave me some divine vibes, you know, at various different points. You said, who did you say? Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Tim Curry, Rocky Horror Picture Show, 100%. Oh my God, though, him in the heels running with the briefcase was probably my favorite thing.
When we were reading about this film, last episode, and he was billed as this hermaphrodite, I don't know, kidnapper or whatever. I was a bit wary as to how that was going to go. But do you know what? I thought they were actually pretty respectful about the whole thing. And there was at one point when John Stamos was being like the typical sort of 80s alpha American, and he was like something like, "You really are a woman, aren't you?" or something like being really derogatory. And he just owned it. He went, "I am a woman." And then, like, he goes, "No, I am a woman." And he just, like, smacked him or something. Like, I was like, fuck, that's pretty good. They didn't make it weird. There were weird bits in it, but they didn't make it. They didn't hammer that as being a negative, as making him evil.
It's not as problematic as you would think it would be. No. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the line was actually pretty good, I thought, because he says, like, "I am a woman," and he smacks him. He says, "And I'm a man. I'm like, and I forget what he said, but he said something like, "I'm better than you because for that reason. Like, I'm more of a person than you are," which I thought was kind of cool. It was very much like evolution. Like, he was Magneto saying, like, "I'm the next evolution. Like, you're like a homo superior, homo
I'm
sapien.
I'm a god among insects."
Yeah, exactly.
Remember when Gene Simmons says that?
Yeah, I like Gene. There was one bit when there was a scene with him and George Lazenby, and I felt like maybe that wasn't the best acting I've ever seen, but I did like him overall. I thought he was very good.
In the contract, he was like, "I have to do the tongue, though. I get to do the tongue whenever I want. Like, because you know,
I am just disappointed. So poor Vanity had to get the tongue. Why didn't we get to see John get the tongue?
He did try and give John the tongue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He tried, but we didn't see it. True. So doesn't count.
John's too suburban. John's way too suburban.
Oh yeah, but Vanity, I liked Vanity. She was good. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about her. I've never seen any other films.
I didn't know anything about her, and then I was sad to see that she actually passed away in 2016. Mm. So, yeah, she's really young, only like in her 50s.
I think she was Prince's girlfriend in real life or something.
She was supposed to be in Purple Rain. I was reading about that. Yeah.
Well, I could see it. Mm-hmm. She's a very attractive lady. And she had good charisma. I thought she was decent in this. I liked her. Robert Englund being in it, like I said, was a huge surprise. 2 years after Bloody Nightmare on Elm Street, that's crazy to me. So I liked all of those. Do we get back to the movie? Have we done talking about?
I think so. I mean, because the plot does get a little. I don't know what's going on because now I actually did like Gene Simmons as Carruthers. I thought like then it was cool to play. Essentially played two different characters, and I thought it was...
I genuinely was surprised in the helicopter when she's like, "Crothers!"
That was skit,
I was like, "Oh, shit, I didn't catch that."
Honestly, Marcy, I think the first time I watched it, like, even though it's like that, I was kind of half watching it, and I was like, "Oh, it really is him." I think somebody pointed it out, but it's like...
It's just a low-budget movie. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it to be Gene Simmons. I just thought the guy looked like not that great because it was a lower budget movie. Right. I didn't think anything past that. Mm-hmm. So just
after the headbutting sex scene, which was weird.
He was watching them the whole time, right? Like he was watching the whole time.
And they knew they were being watched too, because that was part of it. Was like they were laying like bait or whatever, and they knew people were watching them. And she's like, "You know what? Let's just get it on right now and have everybody watch."
I think that's why it's three times, because it was like different binocular perspectives every single time.
So they've just done it. They've just done it. And Lance is a bit like, maybe we should do it again. But then I think Carruthers does this thing where he does a body swap with them. They put the fake versions of them in the farm. I don't know what the point of that was. I don't know what the point of that was.
So the regular and the other people would be like, oh, they're there. But with these people that are like D-level John Stamos and Vanity because they look nothing like that.
And then Carruthers puts Lance, Stargrove, and Dansha in a helicopter, and then he unmasks himself halfway through the ride.
I thought that was funny.
Oh my goodness. And I'm watching it and going, oh God, are we supposed to, I honestly thought, am I supposed to be surprised by that? I'm glad, Marcy, that you were surprised.
I was like, oh shit, like things are getting real now. Because I was like, what does Carruthers like have to do with any of this? Mm. Like, why is he like, he doesn't look like he's part of this group. And it was like, oh, there we go.
But I just want to point out that they have been captured at this point. So they've not done any actual spy work yet. So they've gone to watch, a performance, a musical performance. then luckily, Lance managed to avoid reacting to his own name. He had his bug found after 30 seconds, and then they've gone back to the farm. They've had some sex, good on them, and then they've been kidnapped and taken to the Thunderdome.
Yep, you got it.
That's how they end up. And at this point, I'm thinking, God, what's going to happen here? What's going to happen here? And I look at the time, and I'm like, shit, there's only 15 minutes left of this. And I'm like, how have we got to the finale already?
You missed the part that by the time they get to the Thunderdome, both of their shirts are wide open, and they're just like, here we are.
I'm gobsmacked. I'm like, oh my God, this is how we get to the finale. So they get to the finale, and Mikey, explain it to me. Break it down, these final scenes.
Well, Gene Simmons, Ragnar, he basically is one. They have basically won. And he is about to celebrate. They're going to kill John Stamos and Vanity. And then John Stamos has the wherewithal to start goading our wrestler friend from earlier who had his face and shit. And for some reason, this works. Mm-hmm. And they get into altercation. And somehow John Stamos ends up with an AK-47 in his hand and just starts laying waste to everybody. Like, no problem.
Murdering people.
Like, he's just a kid that was in college and he's okay shooting people.
Yeah. At this point, he's not been given a job by the American government.
No,
he's just taking lives.
Right. Yeah, no problem. Mm-hmm. And then all hell breaks loose. And I think this is the part now, too, where Ragnar goes inside. And the plan is now they have the chip because they knew the chip. So the father had
the
nailed
MacGuffin,
the microchip, whatever it was mailed to the John Stamos's apartment. And
can
the roommate.
Stop you there for 1 second. Yeah. Stop you there for 1 second.
Yeah.
And again, I'm like, The chip is in that care package. That's where the chip is.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Because
this is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Like, he mailed him the diary.
I should get a job with the American government because I knew Carruthers was Velvet Ron Ragnar, and I knew that Drew had bloody sent that floppy disk to his son in the care package immediately.
Yeah. And they have it now. So then they knew they stole the kid's bike. The roommate brought it out there, and then he put it in the bike, and they took the bike. And so now Gene Simmons has the chip that they need to do something. I don't know what anymore. They're on the dam. They're going to poison the water with these hydraulics. The chip isn't there. He set the computer to do something in 2 minutes and 50 seconds, in 3 minutes.
We didn't talk about whenever Gene is with Robert going over the plan and what this is going to do. And he's like, that right there. He's like, that's a little goldfish. Do what?
I did.
Yeah. It was just to get Robert Eglin some more screen time. But they look like friends.
I had to rewind that as well and go, what is he talking about this goldfish for? And I think they were just saying that's how bad the poison is. The goldfish didn't look like a goldfish. But carry on, Mikey.
Yeah, I mean, don't try to make sense. This is one of those things, like, if you just go with it. So the timer starts at three minutes, and somehow John Stamos gets back up on the bridge. And they have a scuffle. They are fighting now. They're having a great fight. And at one point, John Stamos also learns how to fight, too, because he realized he could channel his gymnastics.
Gymnastics
come back into it, yes.
I was so thankful gymnastics came back to it.
Yeah.
Because it was like, why did we get That bloody right. gymnastics montage at the beginning. I was thinking mm-hmm. that all the way through the movie. I was thinking, Lance Stargrove, you're supposed mm-hmm. to be this awesome gymnast. Why? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Show us some skills.
Right.
It comes back. It does come back.
It's an easy transition. I don't know if you know this. Mm-hmm. A lot of MMA fighters start off as gymnasts and then mm-hmm. just quickly transition into MMA. It's just an easy transition. John Stamos has the upper hand at one point, and Ragnar does have a moment where, like, okay, he beat me, like, and maybe the feminine side comes out more, be like, I can't believe you hit me kind of thing. And John Stamos has a moment where he's like, yeah.
You can't hit a woman. I think
you can't hit a woman. Yeah, you can't hit a woman. And he goes back to the computer. They fought for maybe 7 minutes. He goes back. The computer's down to 2 minutes and 35 seconds, too. So basically, in movie time, they fought for 25 seconds. And he says, turn off this computer, something like that. Ragnar whips out his famous finger that he's been stabbing people all movie with. And he tries
to mention the finger.
We haven't even mentioned the finger. There's so
that's
much.
That's his yeah. weapon.
That's his move.
His weapon to kill people yeah. is he gives you the finger.
No. His eyes roll into the back of his head first, and then he does yeah. the finger to the throat. We've seen it to the throat. We've seen it to the chest. Who knows what's going
on? Have you ever seen the film Mystery Men?
Yes.
It reminded me so much. I thought that's probably where they've got Casanova Frankenstein's big move from, because Casanova Frankenstein, what's he called? He just chases people with his finger, and it's like they've got it from Never Too Young to Die.
Oh my god,
Casanova Frankenstein.
I wonder how much was all Gene and how much was like this was in the script and they wrote this and Gene just like really embodied this character, or like how much was his input, like he should have a finger. And
yeah, I really hope that they said, Gene, now you're going to chop this guy's head off. And he goes, wait. What about if I've just got a really long fingernail? Stay with me. And I just insert it into people's carotid artery. Do you think that'd have worked? Mm-hmm. We all just look around and go, that works, mate. Punch it.
Yeah, the writer was like, you know what? We could have everybody in the beginning just chant, finger.
And they all went for bagels after that. They were so happy with themselves. Yeah, they're having this fight, Mikey.
Right.
He threatens him with the finger.
And then just like in wrestling, it's like then the villain, the heel, gets the upper hand and throws John Stamos over the railing. You could clearly see the attachment to the stunt double as it's being thrown over the stunt.
It's like he's like basically like tickling him and he's like, ah, gotcha. Like it's like one hand.
And then yeah. At one point, a whole hand just comes up. And he's just like,
I thought both hands had got off, and then I was like, wait, how do you get the other one back off?
So again, Ragnar's won. God. He's won. And John, and he's about, he's,
oh my
he's playing
God.
With and him, hitting each one of his fingers off. He's going to fall to his demise.
Oh yeah, with his little whip.
His little whip, yes, to whip him out. And John Stamos says, with sincere tears in his eyes, what does he say? I just want to see
you're so beautiful. You're so something beautiful.
Like so beautiful.
So beautiful. Wins you're over.
So beautiful.
Oh my god.
Wins over Ragnar. And Ragnar, this is where Ragnar's going to give the tongue. I forget too. Like at one point, he
should have happened. It just should have happened.
Yeah. He should have licked his face or something like that.
I would have been for it. So
we all wanted it. Like we all wanted John Stamos to get tongued.
And then he climbs up the dam using his massive erection as like some kind of grappling hook.
Honestly, if that happened in this movie, no one would have been surprised if that happened.
No. Carry on.
I don't know what happens. And then Gene Simmons gets thrown to his.
This is
dummy.
What happens.
Well, he like yeah. wraps his legs around.
Yeah, yeah.
Him,
I don't.
And then like throws don't blink. Him over. Yeah.
Nobody. It's like you said, Mikey. The gymnastics. So that's his.
Oh,
ring routine.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Routine.
That's right. That's what it was. He grabs his head. That's right.
We see him earlier on in the film doing the rings. Mm-hmm. He does the same sort of move. Mm-hmm. Again, pulling himself up and sort of like Hurricane Rana in Velvet von Ragnar off of the dam. And we see a real lifelike dummy fall.
Yeah. It was a good dummy.
Off of the dam. A great dummy. Looks like human flesh was hitting that.
Yeah.
The dam. And then
they did not cut
going
away.
Going in the water. Mm-hmm.
Whenever you see his body later.
I was thinking of these movies. No, that's not the end. Yeah, he has to get rid of the bomb, I guess, now. This is a bomb that he has to get rid of.
forgot about
this. Is the computer's about to go off? The countdown's going.
He's got about what, 30 seconds now. So that it's that down, 12-minute fight has taken two movie minutes.
Data gave him a gun. Yeah, Data gave him the flame. He gave him the flamethrower, and he's going to use it. It was actually pretty funny. And he pulls the trigger, and it's like a dud. Something falls out, and he's like, ah, curses. So then he grabs the briefcase, throws it in the air. Then he grabs the flamethrower, throws that in the air, where we see they simultaneously hit in the midair and collide and explode. It was going to explode. Simultaneously.
Just like Lance and Danger. And simultaneous. I mean, it took me, I had to rewind that. I went,
yeah, it was
then?
Like, what was going on? We don't even know.
This is what I think happens. Is this right? The flamethrower hits the briefcase at the last second and it explodes the briefcase. Is that what happens?
I guess it has like, Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi and then stops working at that point.
And that's it. The Bluetooth kicks out and the water is not poison. That is what happens, right?
I guess so. I think that's what it was. I think at this Brilliant. Point, we're just supposed to be laughing. It's not supposed to be, we're not supposed to be cheering. We're not trying to be making sense. We're just laughing. Like, this is just great. It's just great.
At this point, Mikey, I'm just waiting for the authorities to arrest Cliff and Lance for the murder of about 25 innocent gang members.
Could you imagine the paperwork? Like, trying to write the paperwork of what happened? Like, taking everybody's testimony, being like, now, what were you doing?
There are no surviving members to take testimonies from.
That's true.
Everybody
That's
died.
True.
The mm-hmm. only people alive were Lance, Cliff, and Danja. And they're just going to stick to their story, aren't they?
Yeah.
Hey.
So, also, you know what I was thinking? Like, how did he even get roped up into this? It was just because it was his dad? And, like, the government was like, well, your dad had this job.
No, he didn't get roped into it.
He didn't. He just did it, right? Like, on his own?
Yeah.
He just started doing it.
He just, like, kind of, like, as I said before, Mikey, there was no actual spy work in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like one mistake after another. And he was lucky Cliff gave him a murder weapon at various different points. No skill was displayed apart from his gymnastics at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody's giving him a high five. Everybody says, well done.
Yeah.
Dan just like, you better stick around. You can't go back to chem. Class now that you've
he's like, I've got a biology final to go to.
Mm-hmm. He's like, I've got a recess next, and
by the way, I'm a minor.
Yeah,
no, just oh my god, she did have the saddest like puppy dog like sad eyes though. Whenever he like first left, I felt so bad for her. I was like, honey, you can do better.
She could do way better than oh god, mm-hmm. I almost said Tony Danza. I'm sorry. You could do so better than John Stamos.
Maybe that was who they asked first.
Tony would have been good.
John Stamos.
Who's the boss?
I did like that after multiple murders, everybody was just really happy and let these kids just go back to college. And they were driving away, and then they did this comedy thing of driving all the way back just to collect the lady. And the lady's like, in front of her employer, in front of all of her employers, she's like, yeah, I'm going with you, mate. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're not getting a job in espionage again.
The 80s. That's a role in the 80s movies.
But that post-credit scene was her signing up for classes for the fall.
You know, the one scene I wanted to talk about that I thought was the coolest was like the chase scene. He's on his motorbike and she's in her Corvette. She's on a Corvette, like on the phone, actually. She had a phone in the car. And then the biker gang comes up in their bikes with the horse heads. And they were just like whipping like chain. What are those? Like the flails?
This is Mad
Max. It's awesome. Yeah.
This is super real Mad Max. I love how though she goes, Dirk has not seen Christmas Vacation, but I love how she gets under the moving truck like Clark herself.
Yeah. And then she blows them away like no problem. Like has the biggest like revolver and shoots them. And they pull over and they talk like, yeah, okay, what's up? Like, yeah,
we just killed people.
Yeah, no big deal. Mm-hmm. No big deal.
We also forgot to mention that the title of this movie is said at the very end. When Gene Simmons was trying to knock his teeth, and he goes, you're never too young to die.
That made me think of Seti Bimko. And if you listen to Seti Bimko, every time they mention the name of the movie in the movie, George just stands up and applauds, I think. So it just really made me think of Seti Bimko.
It's pretty good. I don't know how you describe it to anybody. Like when you just have to like experience this, I think. I think if anybody out there is going to watch this movie and you're going to put this on with your friends, you're having a drink, just put something on mindless and just have a good time.
Yeah, honestly, Mikey, I was like thinking about all the movies I used to watch at college parties, and I was thinking of Hot Rod, especially with the bikes and things. And I was like, this would have been so much fun at a college party, or just like even now, like if you could get a bunch of friends together.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, like when your party's like winding down, you're like, let's put on a movie.
Yeah. And, or you're hungover on Sunday. This. Like, let's just hang out and like wake up.
Let's recover with John Stamos. Yeah.
A lot of fun. Thank you, Dale, for
Thank you, Dale. Yeah. And thank you, Mikey.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's been a weird week, I think, for everybody. So it was just nice like having this, like you were saying, Mikey, earlier.
Yeah.
Just a little 90 minutes of fun, you know.
But perfect for Instant Mix. And the story, a backdrop of friendship, Mikey, that led you to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you, Mikey.
Friendship grows. Now I shared it with you guys.
Friendship grows in all the right places. But now we morph into the music mixtape from the movie mixtape. Movies, they're not behind us. They will come again. But music is our business right now, and let's get to work. If you look down and look at the show notes, you might see a link to our Spotify playlist. That is a playlist for all the previous songs that we've chosen. Because each episode, we pick a song that we thought about that relates to this movie in some way, and we share it with each other right now. And so we've not only discovered movies that we like, that we love, we discovered music as well that we love. Okay, Marcy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I will go first. So I picked a fun song because this movie is very fun, so I just thought it would be fitting. And the song I picked is called California. The group is called Oh
Red
He
Hot
Dead.
Chili Peppers.
No, Oh He Dead is the name of the group. But the song is just all about like wanting to get it on with somebody and like looking at them and being like tempted, and just my favorite line is like, is that look an invitation for us to start a party in here?
Is that look an invitation for us to start a party in here? Cause I get you in my ear, I'll get you in my room, I'll meet you on this. Cause I'll be feeling it soon, and you'll be feeling it too, I'll meet you on this. Take me back to California, on your
just
anything. So is it
with Danja and Lance? So
is it from Danja's perspective or Lance's perspective?
Oh, it's a female lead singer, so I'm gonna say it's from Danja's.
Yeah, I mean she was in control. She was in control. Yeah.
She knew what she was doing. Yeah,
she knew what she wanted. She wanted a little. She wanted a little bit of vitamin Stamos, didn't she? In
she
her diet.
Bite of that apple. I'm so sad though. We didn't get a Have Mercy or whatever he says.
Oh, that would have been funny if he brought that. I'm telling you, this would be a good Uncle Jesse backstory. It'd be pretty funny if you think of it that way.
But Dirk, I think you're next.
I'll go next.
Your pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say Mikey for last.
We always save the best to the last, Mikey. So Never Too Young to Die. I did think it was looked like it was going for, James Bond Jr., that type of thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, the legacy title of a secret spy, and that's where it was going. So I was focused on the idea of that, of youth. So I went with a song by a Manchester band. You may have heard of them. They're called Oasis. And this song is called Stay Young.
Oh.
Which,
Wonderwall.
Oh.
Which I when after I picked it, I realized has been used in quite a famous movie as well. The Faculty is the song that plays at the end of The Faculty.
Oh, I haven't watched The Faculty. Josh Hartnett, look at us coming back full circle.
And it's, hey, stay young and invincible, because we know just what we are. And come what may, we're unstoppable.
Because
you know just what we are.
Stop.
Yeah, so it's just about, I love that. You know, the power of being young, which is what I think we were getting from this movie. But Mikey,
wow, that's pretty good.
Pick.
Yeah, so I was along the similar vibes with you, Derek. I was thinking about being in this gang. I was really vibing with the gang this time, this Mad Max gang, and what it was like to be Gene Simmons. I honestly, like I said it as a joke in the beginning of this show, but like they were all pretty happy. Like he kept everybody living pretty well. I mean, he was taking care of all these people. He was like a king. I don't know what his problem was. Why do you want to poison the water? He had a good thing. What was his problem? I don't get it.
Wanted gold.
Wanted gold. I did a song. I was trying to think of something with swagger, something fun, like a party, but something with like, you know, there's something heavier as the king in charge. Schoolboy Q. Hell of a night. Shit's real and I just begun. So many ladies want to share my tongue.
Oh my God.
Oh, this man, this life of mine, me and the lead being pressed for time. Take a sip with me. Get it? Like with the water? Now move your hips with me. Now will you take a dip? Now make it dip for me. Will you jump off a cliff and hit the sky with me? That's pretty good. Like he had followers. So I was vibing. I was trying to think of something. It's like nice. A party scene. Like you're in the gang. And this is the leader of the gang. Schoolboy Q. Shit's real and I just begun. So many ladies want to share my tongue. Man, it's life of mine. Me and the lady, we impress the time. So that bottom go pop. Then my rocket gon' spin. Then the moles gon' jive. Ain't no telling how my night might end. Nightlife in the bright lights. Swaggin' hard in my Concord. You at the bottom with the top dogs. We get high as them elevators. Take a sip with me. Now when you hit with me, now make it dip for me. Now when you ride for me, when you die for me, when you jump off a cliff.
What, Schoolboy Q is the name of the artist.
It's the name of the artist. I'm sorry. Yes, that's the name
of the artist. And what's the name of the song?
Hell of a Night.
Hell of a Night. Thank you. What was that line about tongues?
So many ladies want to share my tongue. I mean, beautiful. Come on. I mean, it's looks, like Gene wrote like it.
Looks like I've found my new tattoo with that. Okay.
Write it in Elvish.
I cannot wait to play that loudly on the school run on Monday. Beautiful. There we go. Now, listen. Mm-hmm. By now, you probably have listened to those songs yourself, clicked on the playlist and listened to them, and you've internally judged us as to which one was your favorite. Well, don't keep it inside no longer. If you go over to our Instagram at the weekend, you'll be able to vote on which of those songs was your favorite. Our Instagram is the_movie_mixtape. But not only that, not only can you vote on the song choices, but you will see all of Mikey P's beautiful, beautiful art. Now, we've not seen the one for this. You said, although you did say earlier on that Lance Stargrove was in it. I don't know if that's true or not.
I guess it has to be now, right?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be. It could just be...
I think it should be Gene. It could, just my opinion.
It could just be one massive tongue. It could be just Carruthers there and next to him a picture of Marcy just oblivious. Oblivious to the fact,
like, okay, yeah, like Macaulay Culkin Home Alone face. Yeah.
But each and every episode Mikey does incredible, incredible art for this show. We're so very grateful for you, Mikey. But you can go and see all of the art from all of the previous episodes on our Instagram, the_movie_mixtape. But if you want to do more than that, yeah, if you want to do a little bit more than just look and be a voyeur, why don't you connect with us and email us or send us a voicemail, and our email address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. I think we have got a voicemail entering our pod box, have we not?
Oh my God, the production.
Hello, mixtape. What's happening?
Oh my God.
It's Ron here, your musical director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just calling to see if you got my memo, you see, because the thing is, all Tape Deck podcasts need to submit their TPS reports. When they release an episode.
TPS.
All right. And your Oppenheimer episode, you apparently didn't include a TPS report with it.
Oh,
so
shit.
I'm just going to need you three to go ahead and remember to include those with every episode.
Oh
now,
my
okay?
God.
Thanks.
Oh my God, that's great.
And I almost forgot just one more thing. I know you just recorded an episode on Never Too Young to Die, but I'm going to need you to go ahead and come back and record another episode for me. All right?
Okay.
Hey guys,
oh,
grab your things and head back into the recording booth. That'd be great. Okay? I want to have a little chat about Mike Judge's 1999 workplace comedy Office.
Oh my god!
Streaming on Max in the States, and I think it might be on Disney Plus in the UK. Probably rentable through Amazon and Apple too. So if you could just watch that for me real quick so we can talk about it, that would be just terrific. And listen, I'm going to need to get that stapler from you too when you get a sec, okay?
Oh my god.
See you soon. Bye.
Listen,
Ron putting us to shame. We are.
Listen,
thank
his
God he's coming on. Thank God he's coming to save us this next episode.
So there's a lot to process there.
Yeah,
A lot to process there. The main thing to process is next episode, the final episode in the Instant Mix. We will be joined by our musical director, Ron. And it looks like he has picked the movie Office Space. Office Space.
Great pick.
I'm just going to pull back the red curtain just for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Ron, look me dead in the eyes right now, Ron. There is no movie I have seen more times my life.
I love it.
Than Office Space. If you want to talk to me about Bill Lundberg impressions, like that voicemail, I spent 3 years of my life doing Bill Lundberg impressions. Okay?
What a voice. Production value on that, too. Yeah. What an impression. I thought it was Bill Lundberg calling in.
I thought
just don't touch my stapler next week and we'll be fine.
Ron, I'm holding it inside because secretly I'm having, palpitations right now that we're going to talk about Office Space. I always knew the time would come that we would do Office Space on the movie mixtape. I always knew that time would come.
Yeah.
But I'm just grateful that you're going to be here to walk with us, hold our hands, and that you will be leading us on this journey. That's what we'll be talking about on the next episode, Office Space, as we're joined by Ron, one of the co-hosts of Real Latinos and the host of the Needle Drop podcast and our beautiful musical director. But until then, did you think the Pet Rock was a great idea? We'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Suck on that, you suckers.
Movie Mixtape is presented by Dirk, Marcy and Mikey P. All episodes are edited by Marcy and Dirk. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us over on Instagram at @the_movie_mixtape.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.
If you need a handcuff person, I'm your lady.